Can we use the rap I did again?
What I've been watching. This. I'm not sure. Anyone,
I feel like it was underappreciated.
Wants to hear that.
Underappreciated.
Look, if I can find it, I'll play it.
What have we been watching this week? Welcome to all who are trying to see a movie to watch, a movie to find. Bill and Larry trying to bust a rhyme. Woo!
Mate, it's brilliant.
The point is, it's what we've been watching this week. Now, listeners, I want to say straight up, I'm sorry, because I think we've said a bunch of confusing things about what's happening in the schedule. I'd like to blame Phil for it, but I can't really blame Phil for it.
You definitely can't. You're the keeper of the keys, aren't
you? It's true. The summer is an unusual time, but hopefully what you guys are getting is some good stuff week in, week out. So here we go. What we've been watching this week, we've got four awesome films, two each again. Phil, do you want to... Actually, shall I tell you about mine first?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So I'm going to be doing I Am Number 4, the sci-fi teen thriller, and... Wanderlust, a sort of comedy starring Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston.
Okay, I'm going to be doing The Parent Trap with Lindsay Lohan,
mm-hmm.
Dennis Quaid, and Natasha Richardson. And then I'm also going to do a new film from 2015, The Dressmaker, starring Kate Winslet and Liam Hemsworth.
Interesting. Okay, and as always, guys, get in touch with on superbellybros@gmail.com or @superbellybros if you agree with us, disagree with us, or you've got any other thoughts and opinions you want to share. So shall I start first this time?
Yeah.
Okay, right. I Am Number 4 is up first.
Sorry, what number are you?
Number 4.
There were 9 of us who escaped. Number 1 was killed in Malaysia. Number 2 was murdered in England. Number 3 was hunted down in Kenya before they come for the others. They'll come from me. I am number 4.
Yeah, so hot on the heels of The Hunger Games, Divergent, any other teen things you can think of?
Twilight.
Oh, The Maze Runner, Twilight, Harry Potter even, I suppose.
Harry Potter was kind of the first one, then Twilight cemented it.
And this is kind of when we're really running out of steam, when the bottom of the barrel is being well and truly scraped. I Am Number 4 is based on a book which I think is meant to have 6 stories in it, but there's only been 3 written. So at the time this was made, I think possibly even only 2 have been written.
They're just getting on the money when they could.
Yeah, it's quite desperate, really. You can either say that shows confidence, or you can say that's desperate.
Harry Potter did that. Like, there was only about, I think, 3 books out when they started those films.
Yeah, but by that point, Harry Potter was already a worldwide phenomenon. Not so much I Am Number 4. Have you heard of it before?
No, I've seen the film.
So this stars Alex Pettifer as Number 4. Who goes by the name John Smith in this film.
John Smith, really?
Yeah, genuinely. That's, I mean, they make a joke of it. It's not... Anyway, I'll come to that. He is part of an alien race who have come to Earth for some reason or another. I think their homeworld got destroyed by the Mogadorians, an evil race. And the people being destroyed pulled their resources and said, look, we've got these, I think, 9 children who we've imbued with special powers, and we need them to survive into adulthood so they can use their powers to fight off the Mogadorians. And they get sent to Earth. So you've got these 9 kids in hiding as they grow older and master their special skills, biding their time until they can defeat this evil marauding alien race who've got Earth in their crosshairs now.
Isn't it something like they need to be killed in order or something like that?
I think the Mogadorians just are getting rid of them in order. I don't think it has to be in order, but you know, an opening scene in the jungle, you've got Number 3 there, I think it's Number 3 anyway, and the Mogadorians tracking them down, sadly dispatching Number 3 and then taking his little Number 3 medallion as well. And this causes Alex Pettifer, who's, you know, having a great time on a jet ski, when this happens, it causes a little tattoo on his leg to light up on fire, and he realizes that he is next in the firing line.
Because maybe that's what it is. He's Number 4.
Yeah.
And it's like a little warning system.
Yeah, exactly. I know what's coming next. So he's living out in the sticks with his sort of handler, who I can't even remember the name of. That's how forgettable he was. He just plays the archetypal old man.
Obi-Wan Kenobi now.
Yeah, well, overseer bloke who's got a shiny dagger, who's his protector as he's growing up. And yeah, it's the perfect storm of teenagers wanting to just live their life, man, while also having a greater purpose. And I've got to say, man, the most striking thing about this movie for me was just how bad the script is.
Really that bad?
It's one of those things where sometimes it's hard to tell whether it's the actor who's done a bad job, the director, the editor, or the scriptwriter. In this case, it must be the scriptwriter who just... Oh, yeah.
Like, what makes you say that?
I'll give you a couple of examples. So right at the beginning, when Alex Pettifer's character is showboating on his jet ski, he does a big flip over the wave trail of a boat. and lands, and then one of his dudes, his mates, comes up and says, hey man, showboating like that, what are you on about, right? And then another friend next to him goes, yeah, look at me, I can do a flip on my jet ski. And now, that's a bad joke, isn't it? It's not funny, are you laughing at that?
No, it's just kind of weird.
No, but someone specifically wrote that line. Someone wrote it and thought, well, let's have two friends and let's have them both say something different. And what can the second guy say? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that was written deliberately and left in there. What? What kind of line is that? Here's another one. The town that they move to when they go into hiding is Paradise, Ohio, and then he blends into a new high school, of course, because that's the safest place for a wanted man to go. And at one point, he's walking down the street chatting to a girl who's the love interest, and the town is a bit miserable in some ways, and he says they should have called this town Ironic.
Ugh.
Great, good one. Are you laughing again at that one?
No,
I've got
so
more.
Bad.
I've got more. The next one is maybe my favourite one. He meets Alex Pesper meets this little guy Sam, who's the bullied nerd because he believes in aliens, and of course befriends him because he's useful and has got a good core of steel to him. As this kid Sam is explaining his past pain, he says this: "My entire life so far has been an episode of the X-Files." One more. One last one.
I'm not sure I can take it. Are you enjoying this? Go on, hit me another.
The final one. I apologize, families listening. I've got a word here that could be described as rude, but it's not. It's not a proper rude word. But a girl comes in and saves the day at one point, saves Alex Pettifer's life by, you know, deft skill. But in the process of that, he has to step in at the last minute and also help her out. So the witty exchange that follows that action sequence, incidentally, the action sequences are quite good, but the witty exchange that follows is, hey, well, how come I had to come over here and save your ass? That's the girl. To which he then replies, well, you should have been watching your own ass. It's clever, right?
Yeah.
I was waiting for her to go, no, you should be watching your ass next. And a few more ass-related comebacks. There you go. So there's four examples, I think, of one of the worst scripts I've heard in a long time.
And that was I Am Number 4.
Yeah, and the film, yeah, and in actually reviewing the film, some of the action sequences are quite well directed given that they use a lot of CGI fighting, but overall, it's completely paint by numbers. It makes no sense that Alex Pettifer's character is being all teenage when he should be afraid for his life. He'd rather wander around, you know, being a teenager and going out with girls. Like, oh, for goodness sake. It wears very, very thin. It's very forgettable. Doesn't look like the sequel's going to be made. But all that said, Judith and I enjoyed it. It was a fairly passable way to enjoy
it. You did enjoy it.
And when I say enjoy it, I mean it was on the screen and we didn't, you know, turn it off.
Okay, so what's the grade?
Probably a C+.
C+.
I mean, a plus is a positive thing, but a C is a bad grade, so...
Yeah. Work it out from that.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, my one, first of all, is The Dressmaker.
Myrtle Dunnage, you grew up.
You got old.
Myrtle Dunnage is back.
I haven't seen her since she was a kid. Wonder how she turned out.
How's my mother?
Molly doesn't get out much.
I don't know why you've come to this hole.
Who lives at Mad Molly's now?
She's back!
I reckon you came home for one of two things. Revenge or me?
Gertrude Pratt. The dance is Saturday night.
The dress can't change anything.
Watch and learn, Gertrude. Watch and learn. I can make you the most striking girl in the room.
Stunning.
You can transform people.
Use it.
You could be married in this suit, snapped up by some eligible spinster or hag.
The Dressmaker is an Australian film starring Kate Winslet and Liam Hemsworth. It's based on a best-selling novel, I think, of the same name.
Right.
It is from May just last year, 2015. I didn't choose to watch this film.
Okay.
It was,
you feel like, it seems like you think that's an important thing to say.
Well, it's just, it's not the sort of typical movie that I would watch. So basically it follows Kate Winslet as she returns to this fictional town of Drangatar or something like that, Australia. And she goes back and she's dressed in beautiful clothes. She's very stylish, got very kind of couture hair. And it's sort of set in the 50s. And she returns to this home, her hometown. And something odd has happened in the past with this girl, but she is the dressmaker and she's going to use her fashion skills to influence the town and maybe even get some revenge.
Revenge? Mm, how interesting.
Yeah, the film is, you can really tell that it's based on a book. The opening sort of 20 minutes or so, I had no idea what was going on. They just kept on showing all these different characters. I had no idea what their names were. I didn't really understand anything. But I could easily imagine in a book form, you'd be getting all this extra information about them and they'd be introducing them and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So the first 20 minutes or so, I felt, well, this is a book film. And then you get this core sort of idea, this little bit of backstory, which really kind of hooks you in. This Kate Winslet character, when she left the town when she was just a child because somebody had died, another boy had died.
Right.
And there was suspicion around her whether or not she had murdered him.
Oh, wow.
Which is quite an intense...
You're not spoiling
hook.
Anything by saying that, are
you? I think that's kind of like... It's a very mild spoiler. It's the first thing that really hooks you in, so I don't think it ruins anything like that.
Okay.
And she's come back. She's had a miserable time in this town. She's come back and is sort of wanting to clear her name / get back at all the people that have been horrible to her, all the bad memories. She wants to kind of exorcise her demons from this town, and somehow she's going to use dressmaking to do that. From that point, when you first get that little bit of backstory, I was quite interested. I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is going somewhere. I kind of want to know what was going on. Why was she accused of being a murderer? Blah, blah, blah. And so the film kind of traces this along. And of course, Kate Winslet starts making dresses, and these dresses in this very small town have a massive impact on these people's social status.
Because everyone in the 50s was just waiting to be brought out of their shell. That's the general dialogue.
This is Australia. Remember, this is Australia, not America.
Okay.
And so these amazing dresses aren't really coming to Australian life. And so these girls who are previously thought of as quite frumpy are suddenly being sort of as the most desirable girl in town.
Right.
She has that ability to transform these people. And so she's doing these sort of small deeds and they're having ramifications in the town. And then she meets Liam Hemsworth's character, who is the lovable hunk of the village.
But of course.
Yeah. And of course, he's got eyes only for her. And I just want to point out at this point, Kate Winslet is, I think, 40.
Okay.
Liam Hemsworth is 15 years younger than her.
Right.
And they don't look...
In the film or actresses?
In the film, they're the same age.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Seriously. I know. I couldn't believe it. I was saying to my friends, like, so is he younger than her? But no, apparently they're all part of the same crew, the same school year, and he just happens to be the same age as her.
So do they ever comment on that in the film? Is she looking advanced? She's a very attractive lady, but, you know, obviously advanced in years compared to Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's played as if they're equals completely. And it was the first time ever when I was like, gosh, like this doesn't match up. There's some problem here.
It has to be acknowledged at the very least.
No, not at all. But the thing is I realise I was a bit of a hypocrite, because I'm sure I've seen plenty of films where the guy has been far, far older than the girl that is the love interest of the film. Like, you think James Bond, you've got Daniel Craig going out with Lea Seydoux or whatever.
In those films, you know the girls are younger. They don't make the pretense of them being the same age.
They don't talk about it.
But you're saying these people are in the same school year. Like, they specifically flag they're meant to be the same age.
That is true. But anyway, so that was kind of a weird glaring part. But they've got this kind of weird romance going on. And the film is sort of meandering through these various episodes. And you've got this sense that it's building towards something and there's going to be revelations. You've got Hugo Weaving as a
as a
police sergeant who's has kind of a closeted love of fashion. Laurie rolled his eyes.
Agent Smith from The Matrix is secretly, you know, loves the shoes and things.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Genuinely, he wears ballerina shoes and stuff. But the film is just, as it's kind of working towards its sort of revelations about this mysterious incident from their childhood, the film suddenly seems to take a very weird turn. There's one thing that happens to one character, and I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but you will not believe it happens.
Seriously?
At the point it happens. You will not believe it.
And by when you don't believe it, you think this just would never happen, and so it ruins the film.
No, no, no. You're like, I can't believe they've done that.
Okay.
I cannot believe they've done that. Seriously, it was crazy. They did that, and then you're like, what? And this is like, this is like 2/3 into the movie, and then you've got like a hot, you'd expect to come at right at the end, maybe, but it comes 2/3 into the movie, and then you've got like this massive chunk left to resolve it. But by that point that happens, you kind of, all my interest just dissolved. And I was like, this is ugh. And then it goes properly trippy, really trippy. There starts being like these really violent incidences, like people dying accidentally and sometimes on purpose and things. Just, it goes bonkers. And you're just like, what on earth am I watching? And it isn't signposted at all.
But is that quite fun though? Like a genuine roller coaster, like what on earth is happening?
It was... Here's what I'll give it. I can imagine the book being very... I can see why the book would be best-selling, because it's interesting. It is interesting. You've got these bizarre characters, but the film never gives you enough information for you to really be invested in how these characters' arcs kind of end up. Whereas the film is only, 2 hours? And it just kind of... Things start happening very quickly that you just don't really feel is set up or established as well as you want it to be. And so by the end of the film, I was just like, what on earth have I watched? Like... that was crazy. Like, why?
And it sort of left you not feeling like, well, that was enjoyable. It was more sort of, what on earth?
Yeah, what on earth? I mean, it's very highly regarded. I think it did very well at the Toronto Film Festival. I thought the performance was pretty good. Liam Hemsworth was good as kind of this charming man, but if a bit of a sort of boring hunk. I thought Kate Winslet does a very good job of...
She's great. I'm a big fan of Kate Winslet, I have to
say. She's a talented actress. You never feel like she's dropping the ball ever in the film. She knows what she's doing. She's doing it. But yeah, some of the intensities mixed with the sort of comedy, very odd mix. And I think I'm probably going to wrap up now. I'm going to give the film a B minus, I think.
You have made it sound really... worth watching just for the sake of that surprise.
Like, I mean, I can get my friend to lend you the DVD. I don't think she's going to be watching it again.
All right, okay. Well, thanks, man. Now, you piqued my interest. I bet listeners are wondering as well. Okay, what's my next one again? It was Wanderlust, wasn't it?
You ready for your meeting?
Yep.
Knock him dead, all right? I'll call you later.
Why are you not at work, George?
Oh, I got fired. As soon as we can get back on our feet, we'll come back to New York. But right now, my brother's offering me a job, and Atlanta's the best place for us to be.
Hey, there he is, my homeless brother. Where's your cardboard box?
Here you go, simple data entry. You want me to enter this data? Are you questioning me? Don't question me.
Are you serious?
Am I serious? You're fired. You're rehired. Consider that a warning shot.
Let's get the hell out of here.
Elysium bed and breakfast.
You're looking for the B&B? There's another half mile. You can't miss it.
You guys okay?
We'll take care of you. My name's Wayne, by the way. I'm a nudist.
All these people live here. This is a commune.
We prefer an intentional community.
We're not a bunch of hippies sitting around playing guitar.
It's not like we're signing a lease. We'll give it a month.
2 weeks.
It's funny, I like Paul Rudd very much, and I quite like Jennifer Aniston. To be honest, I do quite like Jennifer Aniston. She gets a bad rap, but she knew what she was doing in Friends, and she knows what she's doing on camera.
She's not got talent, has she?
No, people just write really bad roles for her, I think. This one was an attempt to give her something slightly different. I preferred her in this than I did in lots of films. I mean, the most recent thing she's done is, what, Mother's Day? Which is just, stay away from that, Jen, seriously.
But, well, I mean, Julia Roberts did like New Year's Eve or whatever. Like, really? She's done one of those sort of mass grouped together things.
But this was better because she managed to play someone quite quirky. And yeah, so once they get to the commune, it's a case of, is this how life is meant to be? And they ask that question, should we all just be searching for a simpler existence, a freer existence, where we don't have to worry about rent or we don't have to worry about jobs in the same way? We all just pull our own weight and blah. And it sort of loosely toys with that idea, and the film follows it through as Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston's characters try to figure out where their life should really be headed.
Do you think it's convincing at all?
No, I don't. I didn't really enjoy it because it just felt a bit icky to me. Can I say that?
Icky? Why icky?
I didn't like the hippie commune stuff because I think there are echoes. There are quite unpleasant echoes.
What, of like cults and things?
Yeah, genuinely. That's kind of what it's like. They had this leader who's played by Justin Theroux, who I think is even a cousin of Louis Theroux.
Yeah, he is. He's now married to Jennifer Aniston.
Is he really?
Yeah.
How about that? Well, he doesn't play her husband in this, no. And Paul Rudd is Jennifer Aniston's husband in this. He plays this hippie-ish leader who's quite disturbingly out there. And it's all sort of free love in a weird way. And it made me think of the Manson family stuff. That's been in the news recently because I think someone has just been denied parole who was involved in all that. So I think that came to mind. I found that a bit uncomfortable. And a lot of the sort of ideas they put forward, I couldn't tell whether it's being disrespectful to some people who do genuinely hold some of these views. And just generally, I didn't enjoy it. It wasn't much fun. But that isn't to say there weren't things that were good about it. So Paul Rudd, I think, gives a really good comedic performance and proves again that when he's trusted to do it, I think he can lead the screen and lead a film pretty well. Jennifer Aniston, as I said, had something that was just slightly off-piste for her and proved again she can be funny with that sort of quirky thing quite successfully.
So just to get my head around it, is it presented as if the comedy comes from the kind of zaniness of this commune?
Yeah, you laugh at how bizarre they all are, and you laugh at how everyone except Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston is basically a caricature. So what's his name from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Jake's mate?
Oh, Boyle. Don't know his name.
Yeah, thank you. That actor is in it, and he's a nudist throughout the entire film, and they don't skimp on the nudity. So,
well, actually nude.
Yeah, completely and utterly. So be prepared for that. And it's not a sort of positive laughter. It's more, isn't the world just insane?
So laughing at them.
Yeah, but everybody. So after they, you know, lose their jobs and have to leave New York City, the first thing they do is go to Paul Rudd's brother's house, who's got a successful business. And his brother is one of these ultra alpha males who just like rules the roost. And some of that's quite funny, but it's also just a bit uncomfortable as well. I couldn't tell what this movie was really trying to say, who it was trying to poke fun at, what was really meant to be funny and what was just meant to be strange. And I think the redeeming stuff was just Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston doing good comedic performances.
So it's selling on their charm, really.
Yeah, like there's one scene where Paul Rudd psychs himself up to do something that he thought he wanted to do, but it turns out he doesn't really want to do. And although it's very crude, that was funny because he can do it. When he's given free rein, yeah, he's funny. So there you go.
Okay, grade?
C.
C, solid C.
Yeah, I wasn't very impressed by it.
Okay, let's cheer ourselves up a bit with The Parent Trap.
Why the sudden curiosity about your dad, huh?
Mother, you can't avoid the subject forever. At least tell me what he was like. I want to talk to you about my mother.
Well, what about your mother?
Dad, I'm almost 12. How long do you expect me to buy that story that the stork dropped me on your doorstep?
Everyone in the world believes they're unique in their own way. But this summer, Annie James and Halle Parker are about to discover.
This is so freaky.
They're both unique in the same way.
That's my mom. That's my dad. And you and I are like sisters. Halle, we're like twins. I have a brilliant idea. I think we should switch places. I'll go back to London as you, and you go back to California as me. If we switch, they'll have to unswitch us. And when they do, they'll have to meet again, face to face. Honey, you never looked better.
Now, two sisters...
You're back! Mother.
...are setting the perfect trap.
It seems like it's been forever.
You have no idea.
...to bring their parents back together.
And of course, I'm talking about the 1960s version. No, I'm just kidding. No, this is the Lindsay Lohan launcher. Her first film. Yeah, Lindsay and Lindsay. She's playing both twins. This is a remake of the classic film. It stars Dennis Quaid and Natasha Richardson. This film is classic. And I think it deserves that kind of moniker around it. It's a classic film. It's a classic kids film. That maybe it's just classic for me and our family.
Well, we watched it a lot, didn't we?
Because of our sister, yeah.
She loved it.
She loved it like crazy. But I feel like I was watching it in just the other day in my living room, and a couple of my friends had turned up, and they're like, "Oh, you're watching Parent Trap?" And I was like, "Yeah, no shame." And they're like, "No, it's classic." And they just carried on as if it was nothing. Of course, you'd watch The Parent Trap in the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah.
And I just had such a good time. The basic premise of the film, for those who haven't seen it, is you have these two young girls. They've been separated at birth. And one of them's living with their father, one of them's living with their mother. And
that's because they got divorced, wasn't it?
Because they separated. And then it just happens that these two girls don't know about each other at all. They don't know each other exists. And they come to the same summer camp. And at the summer camp, they don't like each other. But of course, somehow or other, it emerges that they have the same parents. They're in fact sisters. And then they just concoct this wicked plan to switch places and in thereby form a little trap for their parents to reunite.
And am I wrong, but does it take them a while for them to see each other's face as well, or something on the camp? Or do they just meet like each other without realizing they're identical? I can't remember.
No, there's a big moment shows them kind of working their way through camp, making different friends, and they have a little sword fight fencing.
That's the one.
And then they remove their masks and then they realize they look exactly the same.
Yeah, that fencing fight is good, man.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good little bit of action. It kind of works, and it's very silly. The whole camp setting is kind of the first chunk of the movie. It's really fun, and it kind of sets up these characters well. It means that you're not jumping into the kind of premise of the film too quickly. You're getting to know these two characters. Interestingly, one of them's from England, one of them's from America, and Lindsay Lohan does a really kind of, if a slightly over the top, but brilliant English accent, and a very, well, her normal accent as well.
She was good. Like, what happened to all that promise, right?
You can seriously see she's a very talented actress, and she does a really, really good performance throughout for both characters. And it must have been really difficult jumping back and forth doing both sort of sides of the screen. It also has one of my favourite quotes ever. I don't know if you could play a clip. It's when she says, a lot.
Oh yeah, I'll see if I can find it. I love that.
I end up saying that so much in my life. It's really bad.
It's quite an addictive sort of one. Yeah.
A lot.
It's the particularly British lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes it work, yeah.
And then I haven't really spoken about Dennis Quaid and
how
Natasha
can you not
Richards.
Talk about Dennis Quaid, man? He is on full Dennis Quaid hero form.
He is fantastic. His face creases up like the best dad in the world.
Yeah.
Like, he is, hey, welcome home, kiddo. He's doing all that sort of stuff. And he's a wine merchant and she's a dressmaker. It's directed, did you know, by Nancy Myers. She is like family rom-commy film queen. She's got this sort of niche, which she's really good at. And you can tell that she knows what she's doing with this film. It really progresses well. The story's really well. And the chemistry between the two leads is really well. They just have sort of, it works. The whole kind of dynamic of having one which is English, one which is American. So you've got him kind of slightly brash and a bit charming and kind of cowboy-esque. And she's very proper English. She's a wedding dress designer. And it just has lots of little moments. You know, you talked to, I think it was when we were reviewing Jason Bourne, you said, what moment is there?
What bits?
Yeah, what bits in it? There's so many bits in this film.
That's true. I can even remember some. You're right.
And then you've even got like some nice supporting characters. You've got Chessie and Martin.
The butler.
The butler and butleress.
Classic.
And it just kind of all works. And I just feel really warm watching it.
It's a bit like a holiday, isn't it, that film? It's very sunny. There's, you know, it's the kind of film in which nothing seriously bad happens. And is it Meredith who's the evil love interest?
Yeah, Meredith is the evil one who's trying to steal away the dad from the mum.
It's nice to watch Lindsay Lohan scheming away. Like, their plans are quite fun, aren't they?
Yeah, and there's one thing I want to really pull out, which is the music. The music is so great. It's got one of the best soundtracks.
Heartwarming.
Yeah, really, like, really upbeat, fun ones. Pretty much all the kind of big songs that you'd expect. Slightly cheesy, but they just use really well. They use the vibrancy of those songs to really lift up a scene. There's a scene where Lindsay Lohan ends up crashing like a wedding shoot.
Oh yeah.
And like, I thought it was a model growing up. No, it's somebody actually who's getting married who now has this little ginger kid in all her like photos.
Is that actually true?
No.
What are you talking about? Hold on.
Within the movie, she's not just a model getting like a picture of her wedding dress. It's like a person who's getting married.
The actual wedding. Yeah.
And so I don't understand why this little girl, she doesn't know, is jumping in. But it just kind of works. And she's got a lovely like.
Yeah.
And she's like, my mom is so cool.
It's completely and utterly contrived, isn't it? In every conceivable way. It's very convenient. Everything is just so that it's incredibly tight, but enormously enjoyable for that. It's the kind of thing where when that sort of thing is done right, there's a reason why it's done at all. And it's just it's a lot of fun that it all works.
It is a lot of fun. It's so fun that a 25-year-old guy still would watch it on an afternoon and enjoy it. And
would
maybe
you recommend it now?
Maybe
you think
get a little bit emotional towards the end.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I had a great time watching it.
You know, I mean, if I wanted to put a little note into here, I think it is worth saying, I think it will annoy some people because this is a great example of the American dream, the negative American dreaminess of some films, because these parents could not be more successful.
That is
handsome,
a good point. I'm glad you pulled it out.
Rich, everything. Seriously.
This is such a unique circumstance. Like, both of them are millionaires. Like, she's a world-famous Vogue wedding dress designer. He's a vineyard owner. And they've just got these crazy houses and like lovely settings.
And the thing is, that's why it feels like a holiday, because it's fun to visit those places. But it does inadvertently, I think, sell the idea that that is part of the reason why these people are special and happy. And you know what I mean? I'm not that being too cynical.
I know what you mean. I disagree. I think the chemistry between the parents isn't based in their wealth or anything like that. It just means, I think the wealth is there in order to justify how you could go transatlantic.
And I think basically to have fun with the movies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's so that you can have fun. It's not sort of saying, don't sour the grape.
I just thought
it's
that was
great.
Worth it, because I'm sure some people think that and think roll their eyes inwardly at it all. But man, I agree with you. It's a very heartwarming film. I've not seen it in a long time, but you made me think, time to pop it in the DVD player.
Shout out to our sister who loves that movie like nothing else.
True story, Susanna. Thanks for helping us love it too. Incidentally, I don't own the DVD. I just want to be really clear. I'm about to borrow it from you, from the sound of things.
I watched it on TV. That was why. There you go.
Well, there we go. Is that it? Is that all our films now?
I need to give a grade, don't I? I'm going to give it an A minus.
An A.
I think it's classic. It's fun. It's just enjoyable. I can't give it an A because that would ruin my grades, but
well, there you go, listeners. Four movies for you. Sorry, both mine are a bit downer compared to Phil's, but thanks for lifting us, Phil.
You're welcome, Laurie. You're welcome.
Not at all. Sorry, no, you're the one who says that. Oh, dear. Hope you're having a great week, listeners. Thanks for listening. Send us your thoughts, soofbabybros@gmail.com or @soofbabybros on Twitter, and we'll look forward to speaking to you next time with our proper episode, isn't it?
Yeah, I should be back or not back. I'm
who
so
knows?
Confused
this
about where we are
to guess. We're recording all of this way out of sync, so sorry if that's confused anybody.
Apologies.
Yeah, hope you've enjoyed it. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.